This is Foresight Matters with David Cloke.
Hello and welcome. The pandemic has shown why businesses and organisations should adopt measures to be resilient. Indeed, lots of other emergency events such as cyber attack, floods and fires have all revealed just how vulnerable we can be. So why aren't we doing more about it? Why aren't businesses and organisations, large and small, better prepared? What steps should they take? And importantly, what do they need to do? Is now the right time to act? So, regardless of what sort of business you're in, whatever organisation you work for, large or small, this is the podcast for you. We're talking about business resilience and business continuity on this edition of Foresight Matters. So remember, you can get in contact with us. Good old-fashioned email. Mel, do you still use email?
Yeah, I do.
I said it with my last guest, Hugh Deeming. Do we still use email? And I think actually it's probably one of the best ways because you could have a good moan at me then. It's David at foresightsolutions.net. Our Twitter handle is at foresightsol. That's at foresight S-O-L, one word. You can use the hashtag on Twitter as well, Foresight Matters Podcast, or check out our pages on Facebook and LinkedIn. Simply look for our logo. And of course, again, old-fashioned, I think it is now, Mel, websites. You know, websites. Do we really go to websites?
Are websites old-fashioned?
I don't know. Everybody seems
but
to
I'm
use...
old. Okay.
It's foresightsolutions.net. Just to give you some background, today is the 17th of June 2021. We're all reeling from the news at the moment that the relaxation in lockdown measures are going to be delayed by 4 weeks because of the Delta variant. Bad news if you're in particularly sensitive industries to the pandemic, in particular hospitality and travel, but we are where we are. And it's sort of down to professionals like me and my guest Mel, I'll introduce in a moment, you know, to try and promote how we can be resilient through a whole range of different types of challenges to our businesses, regardless of whether we're large or small, private or public, organisations or entrepreneurs. There are measures that you can take to help yourself and to help your business or organisation to be more resilient. So joining me today is... I was going to say one of the old lags of the business, but I think that's probably a bit too harsh. Actually,
No, that's absolutely correct.
Mel Gosling from Mericon.com, you suggest that you're retired. I don't believe a word of it.
I'm still working. Actually,
we've known each other since 2004, so you know, an eternity, I think, for both of us. Tell us a bit about your background, first of all.
Oh, where do you want to start?
Not too far back in the beginning, because you know that'll be in black and white and in degrees Fahrenheit.
Yeah, let's go from the 1990s. Then.
Okay, then.
I was running IT for an insurance company that floated on the stock market in the 1990s, and I did a lot of disaster recovery for that company, and. One day I went to see the MD and I said to him, Michael, his name was, Michael, I said, we can recover all our computer systems, but what about everything else, like the buildings, the people, you know, and so on? And he sort of looked at me blankly and said, what do you mean? I said, well, should we have a plan to recover everything, not just the IT? He said, yeah, okay, you've got the job.
And it all started from there.
It all started from there, yeah. But subsequently, the company went bust.
Okay.
Now, that's a story in itself.
I'm not going to edit that out.
No. Don't edit that. Subsequently, the company went bust, right? But in 2001, I'd left the company. I was a senior executive. I'd left the company. And I was planning to retire. But all my money was tied up in the company. And I lost it. Like, I lost 2 million quid. Wow. And I thought to myself, what the hell can I do now? And I thought, yeah, one of the things I'm good at is business continuity, because I didn't implement it for this company. And that's how it all started.
Yeah. And that was Mericon.com.
I started it in July 2001.
T- tell us about this term business continuity, because, you know, you and I understand what it is. To someone who is new to the concept, or, you know, is running a business, starting up a business, what is business continuity? Why does it matter?
Oh, do you know, you're the second person who's asked this me this in 2 days.
Really?
Yeah, the other person was from HSBC, and they were checking that my company wasn't involved in drug running or money laundering or whatever. And I put down what my business did, and he said, "What the hell's business continuity?" And I couldn't believe the guy didn't know.
Really?
But, yeah, absolutely. But essentially, to give a party definition, what I mean by a party definition is, like, if you're at a party and you met a dentist and you said to him, "What do you do?" He said, "I fix teeth." Hmm. So what's a party definition of business continuity? And I think the best one is an American guy who spoke to me years ago, and he said, it's all about making sure you keep shipping the product out of the door. What it means is that whatever your business does, whatever your organization does, you can keep doing it. And that's what business continuity is.
And regardless of challenge, or within, you know, a reasonable span of risk.
Yeah, that's right.
What you can reasonably do. And I think, you know, I don't know if you agree with me on this point, but I think some people think that this magic, you know, term or magic process called business continuity will fix everything.
And, no, it won't.
And, you know, as you said, you know, organizations go bankrupt. I think during the pandemic, you are seeing businesses go under because simply they have no customers. They have no cash flow. So this is not something that necessarily protects your means to generate your income or your customers.
No, it doesn't. But, I mean, that's one of the areas where business continuity, I think, has been a bit myopic. That it's concentrated on things like loss of business, loss of premises, loss of IT. What about loss of finance, loss of customers, loss of suppliers? You know, these are important aspects of keeping your business running.
There are a lot of really interesting tools, aren't there, related to business continuity? And actually, you know, if I could just focus in on one. Business continuity is about protecting what is important.
No, I would disagree with you there.
Right,
David.
Good. Disagree with me.
Okay, it's not about protecting. That's security. Now, business continuity is how do you carry on after that. It's not about protecting it. It's about, okay, this incident has happened.
How do we
recover?
It's
been a flood. It's been a fire. Yeah. What do you do now?
Yeah, how do we recover? How do we continue? How do we do things?
Absolutely.
You know, I've always put business continuity in a place of the space saver tire. Because
that's an interesting concept.
Yeah, it is an interesting concept. And people who've seen me present on business continuity, I really think the space saver tire is the
you're
greatest.
You're probably right there, actually. I'm just thinking about it. Actually happened to me years ago.
It is. You know, so what happens, you're going along, your car is a tool of your job or a tool of your life, and it is something you get into which delivers something that's critical to you. And its continuity plan, if it has a flat tire, which is a risk that we understand, you know, that there is always a risk of getting a flat tire.
You're absolutely right, David, because, I mean, years ago, I was driving my really fast Jaguar car down the M6, and there was an accident in front of me, and luckily I wasn't involved, but I drove over to debris, and it bust a tire. And I had to pull over to the hard shoulder, and in the back of my car, there was one of these space saver tires. And I had to drive for the next 200 miles at 50 miles an hour.
But at least you could still drive.
I could get there. Absolutely.
That is how I describe business continuity or any sort of business resilience. Is what you're understanding is that you can still do something or still deliver something, but at a reduced rate or a reduced capacity or reduced speed.
And then just carry on.
And then during that time, you get the tire repaired or replaced, your normal one. It gets put back. That's your recovery plan.
Exactly.
Back up and running.
What happened to me was I got a tire company that met me at a service station. They turned up, replaced the wheel, and off we went.
I just think I've used that over the years, and I think to explain to anyone what business one of the basic concepts of business continuity is using space saver tire. But I don't know what you think, Mel, but When I talk about business continuity, and as you know, I'm a bit of a fan of it, people switch off.
And that's because you call it business continuity.
Exactly. So, so if you are listening and you're part of a small business or an organisation or anyone who doesn't really have an interest in this, and we're going to get lots of listeners who you know are in the profession of emergency management, continuity management, crisis, da 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 da. But if you're in a business and you say, "Look, we can really help you here with business continuity," they go, "Oh no, thank you," and the phone goes down. So, should we be thinking now, particularly post-pandemic, and I think this gets us onto a broader discussion. The government says build back better, but you know it's about promoting the economy rather than promoting the resilience of business. Yeah. So should we be thinking along the lines of saying, let's do better business planning that protects you rather than trying to push the term business continuity?
Yeah, absolutely. No, I totally agree with you. I don't think anyone should push business continuity because it's a turnoff. You're absolutely right. And it should be about how to help people keep their businesses running when things happen to them.
Yeah. Do you think that would change the sort of appetite of organisations if they sort of thought that way?
And said, yeah, it would. No, absolutely would. It would. And not, I mean, it's terrible what I'm going to say, really, because what's happened is there's a business continuity industry grown up, and there's been people who are experts in it. They've got a society promoting it. They've got exams. They've got procedures. They've got processes. But it's a real turnoff for most organisations.
Yeah. And yet, if you are integrating it into a bit of thinking about how you're going to run your business, it is actually quite simple, isn't it?
Oh, it's very simple. No, first of all, look, let me take you back to a startup company, all right? Hmm. When a startup company starts up, what are they worried about? Finance, customers, okay? Now, they are actually involved in business continuity at that point because they're thinking about what happens if I haven't got enough finance? Or what happens if I haven't got enough customers? What am I going to do? That is business continuity.
Hmm.
But the business continuity professionals don't really think about that.
Mm. I think as well, there's always a worry that organisations will claim that they're doing business continuity and all it is a list of telephone numbers.
It's tick box, actually.
Yeah, tick box. It's tick box. Or instead of having a proper space saver wheel, they'll essentially put in a supermarket trolley wheel.
Yeah, they've got. But they'll say, done that.
Not naming names, but I'm sure you've seen that happen.
Hundreds of organisations do that. Yeah, I have. Hundreds.
So what advice would you give, particularly for, I really want to focus on small and medium organisations, particularly, following the pandemic. What's your advice at the moment?
Well, I say following the pandemic, I think a lot of organisations have actually learned a lot during the pandemic, which is how to keep themselves going. So if businesses are still here, right, still existing, still operating, despite the pandemic, I think they've actually been through that experience already. Mm. They've learned how to survive. And some of them may have hibernated, particularly a lot of the hospitality businesses. Some may have thought of another way of doing things. Like, restaurants, everyone's got an example of restaurants that weren't open, but they started to do home deliveries.
Mm.
Yeah? So I thought of another way of working. So I think a lot of businesses have actually learned a lot during the pandemic about business continuity. They don't know it's called business continuity, but they've learned that that's what they're doing.
One of the things that is vexing me at the moment is this Build Back Better is, as I've said, government, now quite rightly so, I'm not bashing the policy, but they are focusing on business revival by promoting new businesses to start, existing businesses to get back on their feet. And I don't think that we have got wholly the right message there. And promoting a resilient business to be created, a resilient business to bounce back so it can better cope, not just with the pandemic, but with other things. Like fire is a great devastator of
businesses. It's a very difficult thing because new businesses will concentrate on finance and new customers, right? But existing businesses, yeah, they have to think a lot about what happens if they lose their premises or lose their people or whatever. It's hard to think about what a business could do to be totally resilient because there is a dilemma, right? The dilemma is to be more resilient, you need to duplicate or triplicate your resources. Okay? Mm-hmm. You need two computer systems, two premises, two warehouses. Okay, and that costs money. And in a competitive environment, you know, you're upping your costs, whereas your competitors aren't. You know, if a disaster happens, you may survive. But if it doesn't happen, you may go bust because you've got all the extra costs. Yeah, it's a real dilemma.
But aren't we promoting enough the simpler business continuity or business resilience?
I think there's a lot of simple business continuity, and I think a lot of small businesses know about that.
So what would you say? You know, here's David Cloak. I'm running a company. I want to open a restaurant, or you know, whatever business is, doesn't matter whether it's in hospitality or anything. You know, give me your pearls of wisdom, your pearls of foresight.
All right, I'll give you. I'll do it through an example of a real company that survived.
Okay.
So in 2015, where I live in Kendall, we had a catastrophic flood. By the way, we have lots of catastrophic floods in Kendall every about 10 years, but it was a catastrophic flood. So there's a business I knew that's a friend of mine run. It's a printing business, okay? And their printing workshop was flooded, so they couldn't operate. But 6 years on, they're doing really well and expanding. And I'll tell you why. Because first of all, they had all the information about their customers on a computer system that was in the cloud, okay? And they could access that from anywhere. So their premises was wiped out, but they immediately were able to contact all their customers, and they were able to talk to their customers about what they wanted, what their requirements were. So they didn't have a loss of business in terms of there was an interruption. They kept contacting their customers, and they actually can choose the orders from their customers, and they subcontracted it to somewhere outside the area where there wasn't a flood. And they managed to seamlessly carry on with their customers. So their key thing was that they had all the information they needed, and they could access it, and they could talk to their customers and continue delivering. Okay, it cost them more because they were now subcontracting the work, but they continued to be able to deliver and kept their customers. And when they, you know, the flood waters went down, they were, you know, the place was renovated, they could just carry on seamlessly.
You know, and this is where I think, you know, people like me and thee should be promoting those sorts of relationships. You know, are those the sorts of relationships you can have within your industry to help each other, to buddy each other? And, and I don't think that goes on enough, or is being promoted by, you know, any chambers of commerce or, you know, any business organisation. You see it in public organisations, emergency services. You see that, but it's not a value that seems to be appropriately promoted to say this can
not.
Really
You're
help.
Absolutely
you.
Right. It's not in small business communities, it isn't. But there are blindingly obvious things that you must do, like keep your data somewhere you can access it from anywhere. You know? But no, it's not promoted. It's not talked about.
The other thing, I mean, going on from your example of flooding, I responded as an interested third party to some, I would say, man-made flooding in Herne Hill in southeast London back in, I think it's 2013-14. There was a major water main burst, and around Herne Hill Station, it's a little bit of a basin where there are a couple of parades of shops and a real diverse range of shops and outlets. So you had estate agents, you had a bicycle repair shop, you had a chemist, you had a couple of restaurants, you had some news agents, you had a pub, whole different range. And the flood, I mean, really was substantive. Was substantive. So when I started Foresight Solutions, I thought I'm going to go back a year on and find out how this affected people and have they learned from it? How did they learn from it?
Yeah.
And, you know, how did their insurance companies support them, help them? and lots of different questions like that. And my report's on the website, on foresightsolutions.net. It's an older report, but I think it still holds water. But I mean, I'm
okay. Is that a joke, David?
Hey, I'm here a week. Tickets at the bar. But I'd be really interesting on your view in terms of whether insurance companies can better help their clients. And I'll give you one example. I went into a shop which stored product and had its IT systems downstairs in the basement.
Yeah.
And the repair and restoration, returning to business as normal, guess what? It was all down in a basement. Now, you can say, well, they haven't got much workable space, you know, that they have to use that because they haven't got anything else. But there weren't even the simplest of measures to try and protect that or restore it quickly.
You just reminded me of something. That some work I did, David, for three local authorities in London. They had got shared services, shared IT services, right? And all their servers were in a building in Lower Marsh behind Waterloo Station.
Mm-hmm.
Okay? And they were in the basement. And I had to write a report for them about business continuity, right? And it's the only joke I've ever put into a report.
This I got to hear. This I got to hear.
No, it is. And I said, the name of the street is called Lower Marsh, right? And your servers are all in the basement. Doesn't that give you some sort of clue as to what sort of risk you might be facing?
Yeah, situational awareness, sometimes the most obvious, is not necessarily a good knowledge. Well, I mean, the point that I really wanted to make was when you rely on an insurance company to help you rebuild whatever needs to be rebuilt or restored or repaired or whatever after flood damage, surely simple things like, well, this is a basement area, why don't you raise the electrical sockets up sort of like to mid-height rather than on the floor.
Yeah, well, they should do. I mean, I'm surprised if insurance companies don't do that, because what they do have an interest in is reducing the expected loss in the future. Now, fortunately, the aim of the insurance company and the aim of the customer actually coincide. Mm. So they will do that. By and large, they will do that.
Because it's in their benefit, isn't it?
It's in their benefit. So, it's in the insurance company's benefit because they want to make more money. And it's actually in the client's benefit.
Mm.
So, that happens. But, and I'll say but, there are people who refuse to think about it. And I know it's not a business, but it's symptomatic of it. After the floods in Kendal in 2015, I was in the butcher's shop, standing behind a woman who was buying some meat, all right? Okay. And she'd been flooded. And she was saying to the butcher, oh, we're getting the carpet around to give us a new quote for a new carpet. And I really wanted to turn around and say to her, listen, your house is in a flood area. Don't get a carpet. Have a stone floor, a tiled floor.
Mm.
Because it'll just get ruined again next time round.
Mm.
And people don't think like that.
No. Mm. The other thing that I found interesting, and again, rather obvious, that certain businesses were far more resilient just because of the nature of their business. So where you had a business that could operate online, for example, an estate agent, they were super resilient because they could just carry on.
Yeah.
Whereas anything that involved point of sale, they were particularly vulnerable because without their premises, that was it.
Yeah, but what they can do, David, they can hibernate or mothball. A good example, again, I go back to the floods in Kendal 2015. There's a spa shop on an estate, and I only talk about it because it's got the best fruitcake in the world that some local woman makes, right? It's fantastic. Anyway, never mind that.
This is flooded. Like the Kendal Tourist Board.
I know. It was flooded. All right, it was flooded. And it had to close. And it closed for about 6 months. But what they did, they actually literally hibernated their business, right? So they didn't sell anything, but they came back again in the same place, right, 6 months later, and they're doing really well. So you can actually hibernate a business. Mm. And in fact, the pandemic has shown that, particularly with the government furloughs. Paying for people's staff.
Yeah, that's interesting because, you know, with the pandemic, unprecedented, that terrible word that we use, you know, that there is, you know, I don't know if there's the expectation of government help because of the size and the scale and the impact, but help there was. And clearly lots of commentators, you know, particularly non-political commentators, said, you know, this is one of the best things since sliced bread business-wise. Yeah. But is it difficult for a business to hibernate? I mean, you know, you've only got so much cash. So do you need to be able to say within your sort of contingency thinking, you know, if this happens again, I've got to be on the phone to my landlords. I've got to be on the phone to the council. I've got to be on the phone to my clients. I've got to chase up, unpaid bills.
Yeah, well, that's absolutely right. You need to. I mean, if an incident happens like that, I think the top management team, we've got to sit down and say, the hell, what are we going to do now? Are we going to hibernate the business? Are we going to try and carry on? What are we going to do? Mm. And those are tough decisions to make. But I think they need to make it. And a business continuity plan actually should point people towards thinking about these solutions.
It's interesting as well, the example you gave with the printing company. Would you say that making contact with your customers earlier on, if you do have a problem, regardless of whether it's a flood, but, you know, you may have literally a shortage of a certain supply or, you know, stock or whatever, that customer relationship is fundamental.
It's absolutely essential. And going back to resilience, right, it's trying to make your customers or your contact with your customers resilient so you don't lose them. So you say to them, look, okay, this has happened, but we can continue to service you like the printing company did. But the spa shop, who sells the best fruitcake in the world...
That's a star
said,
shopping Kendall.
Sorry.
Yes, absolutely.
We're closed.
We're
not going to come back for 6 months.
It is interesting. And I think the other thing, and you've seen this, you know, if I give sort of two grandiose examples where there have been major incidents or major interruption, either planned or unplanned, the way that the clients and customers actually do flood back to you. Again, you missed that. Flood back to you when you are in a temporary circumstance. So two examples I would use. The first one is after the earthquake in Christchurch, where they set up all of those metal cabins, you know, the I'm trying to remember what they promoted it as. I'll have to look that up. But all of this basically temporary shopping area, which used a lot of transporter crates and whatever.
Yeah.
And I saw in Elephant and Castle, not too far from where I live in London, when they were regenerating the Haygate Estate, they did exactly the same thing.
Yeah.
And, you know, business resilience, business continuity, is not just for unplanned events. If something is on the horizon that we know is coming up, there's value to it, isn't there?
Absolutely. Absolutely, there is, absolutely. And those are the easy ones to do, actually, David, because you know what's going to happen. You can see it coming down the track. It's the unplanned ones that are difficult.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think, you know, a word from you as well about reluctance of businesses to grip this. What do you think are the barriers? You know, is it just all too difficult to do?
No. Most people I know in business are very happy to talk about resilience and how to keep going, right? It's only when you talk about the jargon, it's only when you talk about ticking boxes, it's only when you talk about standards and getting audited and checked, they turn off, right? That's when it happens. Every business owner I have ever met wants to keep his business running.
Do you think there's too much reliance on insurance?
Yes, I do. Absolutely, absolutely. All insurance does is pay you compensation for a loss. Right? So if your factory or shop or whatever is lost, they will give you some money, right? They do not insure you for loss of customers. Absolutely not. So, you know, you may get all the money to recover what you've got, but if your customers have disappeared somewhere else, that's it. you've got to understand insurance pays you money in compensation for a financial loss. It doesn't do anything else. That's it.
So I do ask, I've asked you for some pearls of foresight beforehand. I'm going to ask you for sort of like some final pearls of foresight. You've been very, very experienced in delivering, you know, all sorts of solutions. What would you say for any business, some, you know, small, medium enterprises, what do you think are the key things? You're saying, okay, you've got all this, you know, this wonderful opportunity, you're really excited about this business or taking your business to the next level. What would you recommend?
In terms of resilience, I would recommend that you are resilient in all the key things that your business relies on, like IT. Make sure you recover your data. Make sure you're not going to be hacked. Make sure, you know, you aren't compromised in data security. Buildings, make sure that your buildings are secure. People, make sure you've got people secure, and so on. And finance, make sure you've got the finance in place. But then over above those things, have some sort of plan in place to say, what do I do if I lose something like this? What happens if my buildings run available? Now, buildings, that's a classic COVID. A lot of organizations have coped really well with that. So you need some sort of plan there to say, okay, if we lose these resources, what are we going to do? And I'm not talking about a great amount of detail. I'm just talking about some thinking beforehand as to what sort of things you could do.
Mel, as always, been a pleasure talking to you.
And that's been very nice to be interviewed by you as well, Dave.
Fantastic. You know, Mel Gosling from Mericon.com. Semi-retired. You're not retired yet, mate. With
no,
so much
I
to
know.
Offer.
And listen, I keep getting clients coming back to me. For God's sake, it's terrible.
They just won't leave me alone. They won't let
they
me
won't
go
leave
to my,
me alone.
To my
exactly.
flat in Spain, will they? You know, go and do everything I really like
well,
to do. And
I'll tell you, David, the COVID has been a major disaster for me because I'm sitting here and I'm not able to travel as I used to.
Yeah.
So I've got time on my hands. So when people ring me up and say, can you do this? I went, well, yeah, I don't want to, but I've got nothing else. I might as well do it. You know?
Mel, an absolute pleasure talking to you. Thank you ever so much.
That's all right. No problem.
So what an absolute character Mel Gosling is. I really hope you enjoyed that. I certainly did. Listen, I'd love to hear from you. Do email me, david@foresightsolutions.net. Our Twitter handle is @ForesightSol. That's Foresight S-O-L. You can use the hashtag Foresight Matters Podcast or find us on Facebook or on LinkedIn. Just search for Foresight Solutions and look out for our logo. Or you could just visit our website, www.foresightsolutions.net. I look forward very much to talking with you again soon on Foresight Matters.
You've been listening to Foresight Matters, an independent podcast presented and produced by Foresight Solutions Limited. To find out how we can help your company or organization, visit our website at foresightsolutions.net.